Good morning. So today I'm going to talk to you about a study that we did where we looked at milk consumption schools that offered only plain milk and compared it to schools that offer plain and flavored milk. And so I have no relations to disclose. So in recent years, there's been a lot of controversy over to keep or remove flavored milk in the school meals. And it's also garnered a lot of media attention. So there are two sides to the story or that you hear from. So like some people say, you know, flavor is part of the solution, and without flavor, milk consumption is going to drop in the schools. On the other hand, you have people like Jamie Oliver in the media and also Chef Ann Cooper that compare flavored milk to, like, if we want kids to eat more apples, then we should just offer them apple pie. So as you can see, and as you probably may be aware, it's a sensitive topic. So what we set out to do was to test the effects of removing flavored milk from school meals on choice and consumption in a school year. And we also wanted to test the moderators of these effects, such as age and any competing beverages. So we had three primary hypotheses. One, initially following removal of flavored milk, that we thought that fewer children are going to take the milk in the experimental schools, but then it's going to increase over time in the school year. We also thought that the presence of juice is going to have a negative effect on milk choice and consumption. And also, we thought that children who had less exposure to flavored milk are more likely to take the plain milk. So what we mean by that is those, the higher grades where they've had the years of whenever they go to the lunch line, their options are milk, plain milk and flavored milk, compared to those that, you know, the kindergartners where this might be their first year. The ones that the kindergartners are the ones with the less exposure. So they're going to be potentially our highest milk takers. So what we set out to do, we had two groups. We had our experimental schools and our control schools. In those two groups, we had two schools in each, so we had a total of four. These were our ends. And all four schools participate in the National School Lunch Program, and all four are Provision 2, meaning that 100% of the student population is receiving free lunch. We studied in these schools all the grades, which went from kindergarten through eighth grade. And all four schools have very high rates of obesity and diabetes. Both groups, these populations were predominantly low minority and also Hispanic and Black. And as you can see from the pictures, in our experimental schools, only 1% plain milk was offered. But for our control schools, they offered 1% plain and chocolate, which was low fat. And also, as you can see from the picture, this was what as kids went through the lunch line, this was what they saw. So they in the milk cooler, there was always more chocolate milk for them to see and to choose from compared to the plain milk. So what we did was we started this study collecting data last December, and we went through all the way through the end of the school year. And on each of the cartons, we marked their gender and their grade. And we went in on what I call a fruit and a juice day each month. So on juice days, what the kids have the option of milk or juice. And so they can take milk and a juice, or they can take just milk or just juice, or they can take nothing at all. Now, on fruit days, milk is the only beverage option. So that's why we went in on days where it was milk and juice and on days where it was just milk. And we also measured consumption for both beverages, but also what we did was we noted the unopened cartons. So, and by that I mean was when a student went through the lunch line, they chose to take a milk, they put it on their lunch tray. By the time they finished the meal, they never opened up the carton and it would just go into the trash. Well, we noted that. So they took it, but they never opened it. Okay, so our first hypothesis. So again, initially following removal of flavored milk, fewer children are going to take the milk in the experimental schools, but it's going to increase over time. So, like I said, we started in December. So this is where, essentially the percentage of those kids that are taking the milk. So from December to January, this is what it was. February, March, April, May, and June. So we were wrong. But how does this compare to the control schools? So as you can see, this was percentage of taking for flavored milk, and then this was percentage of taking for plain milk in our control schools. But I also want to note this red line is the national average for milk, for flavored milk. So as you can see in our control schools, we had some, the percentage was much higher than the national average of kids taking flavored milk. Now, for our next hypothesis, which was the presence of juice is going to negatively affect milk choice and consumption. So for this graph, what I'm going to show you is strictly choice. So this is strictly kids, percentage of kids that are taking the milk. So on juice days, this was percentage of kids taking milk. And how does that compare to fruit days? As you can see, in our experimental schools, on fruit days, kids take more milk. And in our experimental schools, we found that this was significant. However, in our control schools, we didn't find this was significant. And it's possible that maybe flavored milk and juice, their competition is a little bit tougher among each other, you know, perhaps the whole sugar beverage. Now, speaking in terms of consumption, so on juice days in our experimental and in our control schools, this was the average. So a little bit less, you know, when it's that 8-ounce carton, a little bit less than half the cartons being consumed. And on fruit days, again, in our experimental schools, kids are drinking, so they're taking more milk, they're also drinking more milk in our experimental schools, and we found that that was significant. Again, in our control schools, this was not the case. Now, for our next hypothesis, which was children who had less exposure to flavored milk are more likely to take the plain milk. So again, as I was saying earlier, you know, we thought our kindergartners would be our highest takers because this was the their first year at this school. So this was the first year where when they went through the lunch line, this was normal for them, that only plain milk is offered. However, with the first through eighth graders, you know, as they, the higher the grade, the more exposure that they've had. So in our experimental schools, this was what we found, so which was relatively true. So kindergarten through sixth grade, that's what we expected. And then, but what was interesting is that sixth graders are our lowest, and then also that the seventh and eighth graders, they increase. So it's possible that maybe seventh and eighth graders, they're older, they're more developed, cognitive, all that stuff. So, you know, nutrition education, it could be the it could hold true that again, no, this wasn't an intervention or any by any means done in the school, but messages that they receive, you know, in their classroom through parents, that sort of thing, they know that, you know, the plain milk, what it can do for them, it is a healthy option. Now, looking at this, like I said, it's interesting of itself, but how does it compare to our control schools? Well, as you can see, it remained relatively flat over time for our flavored milk and also for our plain milk. Now, so this is all choice. So how does that, you know, in terms of consumption, this was what we saw for our experimental schools, which is, you know, what you would kind of expect as kids get older, you know, they're going to consume more. And again, how does this compare to our control schools? It's relatively the same. And what's really interesting is that regardless of flavor, kids are drinking the same amount of milk. So now in terms of waste, so in looking again at our two different experimental schools, and this is what I, by this I mean, is again that unopened carton. So looking at milk takers, so when they take the milk, what percentage of them take it, never even open up the carton? So in our experimental schools, 20% of those that take the milk are putting it in the garbage. But how does that compare to our control schools? Well, it's more so for the flavored milk. So 25% of the time, it's going in the trash. So, you know, when you think back of that, you know, if it's flavored, they're going to drink it. Well, 25% of them are throwing it away. And in our control schools, 27% are throwing it away as well, too. So, you know, in terms of cost-benefit analysis, there's two things to focus on with milk. There's calcium and there's sugar. And we should note that in our control schools, taking out flavored milk was one of the last choices they made, kind of, this food service director had made. Previous years, he made choices, remove soda, and all these other options to make the meals healthier. So removing flavored milk was one of his last choices. And also, as I mentioned earlier, for this population, obesity and diabetes is very, very high. So as we know, kids outside of school were already consuming a lot of added sugar. So for this case, it was, you know, reducing the amount of added sugar that they're consuming at the schools. So like I said, two for added sugar. We know that, and this is using the flavored milk that was in our control schools, so the 0.5% low fat. What we know is 11 grams of added sugar. And so what I'm showing you here, here's the lines of the maximum amount of added sugar for boys and girls and for their corresponding ages. And so that's where how much the added sugar falls. So let's take, for example, let's say they have a flavored milk at lunch. But also at school that day, they consume for breakfast, they consumed a sugared cereal. So if you combine those two, this is how much added sugar a kid has consumed. So as you can see, most kids, before they even leave school for the end of the day, have already surpassed their amount of maximum amount of added sugar. So, or let's take another example. So they consume the flavored milk at lunch, and again, this is only at lunch. You know, you got to think of some schools where flavored milk is offered at breakfast and at lunch, and kids are drinking 2 cartons a day before they even leave school. So anyway, back to flavored milk, and they also consume a cookie. Well, you can see this one's off the charts. And so now, you know, and that cookie could be at school. So again, by the time they've left school, then all kids have surpassed the amount of added sugar. Or this could be a cookie that you decide to have with them at the family meal. So, like I said, you know, in terms of flavored milk, it's a cost-benefit analysis. You know, you got to choose, you know, added sugar, which is, you know, usually what we want to focus on, you know, in terms of where obesity is our focus. Also, you got to think about the entirety of the meal. So, you know, with people are all afraid to take out the flavored milk because of the whole calcium. Well, you also got to realize that milk is not the only choice of calcium that kids can consume. So you can't think of it just at, of looking at milk for the only source. So it's possible if a kid doesn't drink plain milk with their lunch, that they may be getting enough calcium when you look at the rest of the meal. And also, what needs to be done is to follow the cohort. So the kindergartners that we studied last year, who are now in first grade, what are they taking and what are they consuming? So are they like the first graders who were last year, or are they, because they have had no exposure to the flavored milk at school, are they higher percentages? And then, of course, to follow that cohort over time. And lastly, I'd like to thank my stellar data collection team. This was, as you can imagine, a very labor-intensive project, but they also made it quite a lot of fun. And any questions? Yes. No, we are not. But it is, like I said, it is a great study question. And also it's good to, you're talking about the New York, the 5 years. I'm not aware of that, but you know, it's also, okay, thank you. It's also good to like, you know, couple this with marketing, which, you know, this was not, you know, the choice of the flavored milk, it was done. There was no announcement. There was also no, you know, education. Hey, yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So did you make that adjustment in that modeling?
Yes, I can tell you that no, excuse me, that no, we did not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Worth doing, since we know that children aren't consuming the full amount.
Yeah.
So like really contributing, which also becomes a nutrient issue as well.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What was the support you got from nutrition services in the school district to remove the flavor?
This was... And I'm sorry, I didn't say this earlier. This was their choice. So we didn't set out to, we didn't pick them. They decided it and they approached us. So yeah, so that was, you know, also kind of a, I didn't put a limitation slide, but that is a limitation. You know, we didn't do, this wasn't an RTC. Yes. All right, thank you.